What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is singer, songwriter, activist, author, and all-around great personality, Kinky Friedman, who has his first new album out in 30 years. We'll also have a special visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, who just returned from Paris, our Mavena on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's been a strange, disturbing, and wild week in Europe, America, and throughout the world. In the wake of the horrific terror attacks in Paris last week, our prayers and sympathy go to the families of the many innocent victims killed. Our prayers for healing go out to the many who are wounded and are recovering. As Jews, we pray for comfort for the bereaved and strength and skill for the doctors and medical personnel who continue to assist those damaged by these immoral acts. There is never justification for acts of terrorism, whether they happen in France, America, or Israel. We Jews are dedicated to the concept of justice being affirmed in the world. We pray that the surviving perpetrators and planners of these murderous assaults will continue to be brought to justice, as some have been already, and that further terror attacks will continue to be thwarted. We are not so naive as to believe these kinds of attacks will always be stopped. The long history of Arab terrorism in Israel makes it clear that the best and most energetic preparations will stop many of these horrible attacks, which are aimed at ordinary citizens living normal lives, but they will not prevent all of them from happening. You know, we use the word evil too often in our society, but these acts of murder were generated by people acting from the worst impulses and truly focused on creating pain and chaos for average people. That is evil by any definition. In Jewish tradition, human beings all possess two impulses, one for good, one for evil, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. Morality and civilization are the results of each of us individually and all of us collectively using good to control our actions and using good to work to prevent evil from flourishing. May it be our collective will to address these movements and their leaders with courage and fortitude, and may we have the determination to create a world in which such attacks as those in Paris may be prevented by firm, proactive commitments from all civilized nations and people. You know, we're now seeing a coalition assemble rapidly to fight ISIS, and a variety of military and police actions are being taken already. We'll see whether they prove to be successful, but only in the long run. In future Too Jewish shows, I'll address the challenge that perverse distortions of religious expression present for those of us who deeply believe that religion should be a profound force for good in this world. For now, we must respond by addressing the immediate threat presented by such terror attacks. There's another disturbing element in the response we see to the ISIS or ISIL-generated attacks in Paris and elsewhere. All Syrian immigrants are now being tarred with the same ugly brush of Islamist extremism. That's unfortunate, unfair, and worse, counterproductive. Whatever its limitations, our American government has long demonstrated an ability to carefully screen immigrants to this country and to successfully do systematic background checks on potential Islamist radicals. The facts just don't bear out the extreme anti-immigrant rhetoric being bandied about now, including by many governors of our United States, including Arizona's own governor, and by our own Congress. The truth is that from the time of the 9/11 attacks in 2001 until now, more than 14 years, 785,000 refugees have been admitted to America. Only 12 have ever been arrested as potential terrorists. That is one out of every 65,000 refugees presents a danger, and those were caught. As Seth Jones, who directs the International Security and Defense Policy Center at the RAND Corporation, testified to Congress in June this year, the threat to the U.S. homeland from refugees has been relatively low. Almost none of the major terrorist plots since 9/11 have involved refugees. In most instances, a would-be terrorist refugee status had little or nothing to do with any radicalization or shift to terrorism. He added, none of those arrested for terrorist connections have been Syrian refugees. We need to work to stop ISIS, and we need to cooperate with a wide variety of countries and entities to do so. But we must also remain who we are, compassionate and intelligent Americans who assist those in desperate need of asylum, you know, refugees. In contrast, by the way, there have been 19 terrorist attacks since 9/11 that were perpetrated by neo-Nazi, Aryan extremists, white supremacists in the U.S. Those killed 48 innocent people, including the Charleston church murders in June of this year. By contrast, there have been only 7 Islamist attacks in the U.S. since 9/11. They killed 26 people. Not good. But none of them have been attributed to refugees. And nobody is recommending an interdiction program aimed at white supremacists in the U.S., although the facts seem to point to them as a far more urgent danger. On a happier note, to play us in this morning, here's a song from our guest, the remarkable Kinky Friedman, a Jewish guy from Chicago named Richard who moved to Texas and became a legend. It's from his new album, The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. And the song is called Freedom to Stay.
Tied my bandana, took my pack from the floor. You were still sleeping as I stood at the door. Once more I was heading to God only knows where. That's when it hit me, I was already there. I could ramble 1,000 miles or more, never find the light I've seen in your eyes before. You gave me the freedom to go my own way. But you gave me much more. I had the freedom to stay. Why keep on running just to wish on a star? Searching for heaven when I know where you are. Life is just empty when you walk it alone. So wherever we're going, girl, it's good to be home. I could ramble 1,000 miles or more, never find the light I've seen in your eyes before. Gave me the freedom to go my own way, but you gave me much more. I had the freedom to stay. Tied my bandana, took my pack from the floor. You were still sleeping as I stood at the door. Once more I was heading to God only knows where. That's when it hit me, I was already there.
That was Kinky Friedman's song, Freedom to Stay. When we come back in a few moments, we'll meet him, Kinky Friedman, and find out what moved this eclectic and talented singer, author, activist, and unique and terrific Jew, and one of our very favorite guests of all time, to release his first album in 30 years. Find out when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Kinky Friedman is a singer, songwriter, poet, author, entrepreneur, animal rescuer, and he has a brand new album out called The Loneliest Man I Ever Met, and one of our favorite interviews ever here on Too Jewish. Good morning and welcome.
Hey, Rabbi, how's it going?
It's going well. So, you know, you took a little break from recording albums, like 3 decades. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think life gets in the way sometimes. It's the curse of being multi-talented. I was writing books, getting involved in politics. I think 2006, I lost the race for governor. A race that we won every place but Texas.
You had my vote in Arizona. I just want you to know.
I know. We had a lot of support out of state. And 13% of the best of Texas. But that's what happens when you run as an independent. So I think Ray Price, the country singer, told me that Jesus Christ would have lost to Rick Perry if he'd run as an independent.
But not if he'd been running for president, I have to add.
Well, right now, right now we could use Jesus or Mandela or...
No chance of write-in for Kinky Friedman for president, is there, in this election?
I feel very happy as a musician right now. let the politicians fight it out. They really are they're a weak group. I mean, if you look at the continent of Africa, you don't see any little Nelson Mandela springing up there.
No, you really don't.
You really don't. And in this country, it's the same damn thing. I mean, I don't see any Martin Luther Kings in the civil rights movement, and I surely don't see an FDR or a Churchill running for office here.
I have to say, if it was Trump, Sanders, and Friedman, I know who would get my vote.
Well, but you have hit on two of them that are not corrupt.
That's right.
And also, Bernie would be another chance to have a in the White House.
You would be nice.
But that's about it for Bernie. You know, I really, I don't know. I mean, Obama, I'm I'm not bashing Obama anymore because he's on the way out. And my only advice to him is don't let the White House door hit you on the ass on the way out.
We will talk much more with Kinky Friedman when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world is certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Mivinan Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
You know, Israel was founded as a socialist country. Nobody should be too rich. Definitely nobody should be too poor or starve. It's not really a socialist country anymore. And the housing market demonstrates that convincingly. Let's explore what it's like for average Israelis now.
Yeah, so you're right. And if we'll focus on the housing, it used to be like, you know, 50, 60 years ago at the beginning, it was like Ma'barot, which is a temporary housing.
Yeah, and sometimes then, for years in kind of a tent
for years,
house or
actually,
a caravan.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
No,
there
no,
is
no.
Families that lived in 10 years in this kind of
shanties, really. Yeah.
Yeah, fancy tent. But and then the government built all kind of public housing, Amigar, Amidar, Amigur, all kind of different housing, public housing. And then I would say, you know, it was in a periphery, it was public housing, and the kibbutzim has their own, you know,
their own structures,
yeah,
and their own
their
way
own
of
structure.
Doing things, of course.
But you can see, like, in the at least in the last three decades since the kibbutzim went through all the privatization process and the polarization
right,
between you know rich and poor, and we can talk about it for hours what makes this polarization so you know big. But anyway, so now there is it's very difficult for a young couple, even though both of them will work and academic, will bring nice salary house. It's very rare that they can buy a house without mortgage. It's very rare. It's only if their parents really helping them, and a couple like us, like me, will pay forever the mortgage, and the mortgage will be sometimes 30% of their income, which is a lot.
It's not such a surprise in America to think about people paying a mortgage, but a mortgage that's such a huge percentage of their income is what's
and
a shock.
30%, it's
a lot.
No, 30%, it's good. It's in a sometimes it can take 50% of so what left for education
for
and not to mention culture and you know
and clothing for your children.
Yeah.
One of the really shocking things in recent years for those of us who remember the Israel where everybody was supposed to be on the same plane is to see tremendous luxury housing and then people not able to live. We talk about the periphery, we mean outside of Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or even the coastal plain or Haifa, but anywhere in Israel, it's now become really prohibitive. That's affected national elections too, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I just want to mention in a few words that right now there is the new Ministry of Treasurer.
Yeah, the Finance Ministry, or the I guess in America it would be the Treasury.
Yeah, so Kahlon, he came with a plan. And actually, he already did like a huge revolution 5-6 years ago in all the cellular market industry, I would say. And he's doing the same with the housing industry, and already been proved in some of the cities. And it's already reduced in Afula and other cities the prices of the houses and apartments in the same cities that they are providing like new apartments in 30% off of the market price.
Wow. Which
is, yeah.
30%.
Yeah.
We will talk more, and I think we'll probably continue on this subject. Thanks, Osran.
Thank you.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Tom has just returned from Paris, where he was present during the period when all the bombings and terror attacks were taking place. Good morning, Tom. Welcome back.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you.
It's a strange experience to have to file a I'm safe comment on Facebook. Tell us a little bit about the experience of having been present in Paris during these attacks.
Yeah, actually, this was the first time that Facebook used the tag yourself as safe for something other than a natural disaster like an earthquake or a hurricane. And it turns out that you can only do that sort of by invitation. In other words, if Facebook knows that you're in Paris when an incident happens, whether it's terrorism or an earthquake or a hurricane, then it will invite you to report yourself as safe. If it doesn't know you're there, it doesn't. So I had to make a couple of posts to friends and family telling them that I was, in fact, safe before Facebook invited me to do that. It's an interesting functionality. In any case, I was and I wasn't there in the sense that I'd been in France for 2 weeks, and the Friday evening when these incidents occurred, a friend and I returned a rental car to the airport and stayed actually at an airport hotel that Friday night, which is fairly far from central Paris. And we would have been blissfully unaware of these incidents, except that friends and family started bombarding us with messages asking how we were. So then, like 3:30 in the morning, we were wide awake, and lots of flights, mainly by U.S. carriers, were canceled, and people had to be rerouted, and there was very much heightened security all through the region. There were also, obviously, false news reports in the U.S. to the effect that France had, quote-unquote, closed its borders. Absolutely not true. What France did do was they reinstituted what existed for centuries, which were border control checks on the ground when people cross into France from Germany or Belgium or Italy, whatever, by train or by car. There used to be border control points where you had to show your documents and be inspected and whatever.
I remember.
And that was done away with by the signing of the Schengen Agreement. And between all the signatory countries of Schengen, there's no more land controls, like between Austria and Germany or Germany and Holland, whatever. But France reimposed those land crossing controls as a result of these incidents, and then obviously took a lot of more serious steps within the 48 hours that followed. There was a rare moment of unity in the highly polarized French political life when all the members of both the French equivalent of Congress and the French Senate stood together and sang La Marseillaise in response to Hollande's speech. there was an overwhelming determination in France, both among the political classes and among ordinary people, to show solidarity and to be nice, which doesn't always come naturally to people, whether French or Americans or anybody else.
Right.
And that was probably the most striking thing in the 24 hours following these incidents, was how nice everybody was trying to be and how civil.
Reminds me of the aftermath of 9/11, and for a long time, everybody talked about how incredibly kind New Yorkers were being, which is not their reputation in America across the board. This was an attack on ordinary people. I mean, this wasn't an assault on, yes, the president was present at one of the stadiums that was attacked, but, you know, restaurants, concerts, sort of an attack on normalcy. Not, it wasn't an attack on Jews. For us, that's always interesting. What was different about it?
Well, I mean, this is like terrorist incidents that happen in Israel, random civilian population gatherings, whether it's a sports event or a cultural event or a restaurant or a nightclub, whatever. It just, and it seems to have been unusually well coordinated, and it will definitely harden French attitudes towards immigrants in general, and unfortunately, Islamic immigrants in particular. Obviously, as is almost always the case in incidents like these, it wasn't local French people who were involved, apparently. It was people from other countries working for extraterritorial entities. But, you know, it's sad, and my thoughts and prayers, obviously, are with the families and friends of all who were affected by these incidents.
I want to thank Tom Price for a great special visit, having just returned from France, and we will talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome John Ben Asher, the head of school of Tucson Hebrew Academy, the outstanding day school here in Tucson. Good morning, John. Boker Tov.
Boker Or.
There's an understanding in educational theory that there are multiple intelligences. People learn in different ways.
Absolutely.
Now, Judaism, I think, has understood that for a long time.
Right.
Let's explore that a little.
Well, we see a good example of that in the four sons, or the four children, at the Passover Seder. And it's true, there's great educational research and study about the multiple intelligences, as they are called. People learn best in different ways. And a good educational program at any type of school will address learners where their strengths are. The beauty of doing that in a Jewish day school setting is not only do you reach kids in multiple ways, but you have the whole context of Judaism, Jewish tradition, culture, and practices and values that surrounds it. So, for example, if a child learns best visually, by seeing words on a board, or modeled learning in the classroom, that can be done in a Jewish context, lighting the Shabbat lights, seeing how matzah is made, very exciting opportunities. For those kids that learn better through kinesthetic, through having their hands on, being engaged in science experiments, participating in active play during PE, as early learners shaping their letters out of sand or challah dough are great ways to reach those.
Or making a shofar, for example.
Absolutely. Anytime your hands are on a project.
I want to play devil's advocate a little bit. You know, at the Pesach Seder talks about the chacham, the wise student. Wise student's never a problem to teach. Then it talks about the rasha, the wicked student. How do you teach the wicked student?
Well, I don't believe there are any wicked children. And of course, I think we all take that with a grain of salt at the Passover table. And to reach the child who is difficult to reach, the teacher learns what their strengths are, how they learn, and what's best, what are the best avenues to get in there and to excite that learning. It's all about getting engaged, knowing your kids, and finding out what are the best ways to reach them.
One of the real advantages that a Jewish school has is you can do a lot of teaching by integrating things like music, because you're teaching prayer
absolutely
while people sing.
Absolutely. And the fine and performing arts are also a very critical component of a well-rounded education. So in a Jewish day school type of a setting, you do have a rich opportunity to use a broad brush and address those multiple learning styles through the performing arts, through song, through writing music or playing instruments, also writing a play and performing a play, another exciting opportunity.
All great ways to do things. Thanks, John. We will talk next week.
Okay, see you soon.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is going May 29th to June 9th of 2016. If you want to go with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Judith bumps into her friend Esther and asks, "Oh, I've heard you just got married, Esther. I'm so happy for you. But tell me, was it love at first sight?" "No, Judith. It was love at second sight," says Esther. "At first sight, there was no way to know that my Harry was a multimillionaire." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. We are in the midst of a sequence of splendid Torah portions, rich in complexity, action, and misdeed, all blended together with serious family dysfunction. This week's Sedra Vayishlach in Genesis continues the tale of Jacob, most intriguing of the patriarchs, a man who rises above his own duplicitous nature to become the father of almost all the tribes of Israel. As our story begins, Jacob is returning home to Canaan, having made good in the old country of Sumeria, today's Iraq, or maybe a little bit of Syria or even Turkey. He has 4 wives, 12 children, including 11 sons, and flocks of sheep and herds of cattle, great wealth in that day. As he is about to cross into Canaan, he learns that his brother Esau, whom he wronged so seriously before leaving home in a rush 20 years before, is coming to meet him with an army of 400 men. Jacob is
panicked by this news, deducing that Esau's not coming towards him with 400 guys with spears just to welcome him home. To try to preserve at least half of his household, Jacob divides his family and possessions into two camps, carefully arranges a large gift for Esau, and that night goes out onto a small island in the midst of a tributary of the Jordan River to contemplate his options. While he's there, a stranger comes to him. The Torah is unclear as to whether this nocturnal visitor is a man, an angel, a representative of God, or even a character in a dream. Jacob wrestles with the visitor until the end of the night, and finally, as dawn is breaking, he prevails. The stranger cannot break away, and before he escapes, Jacob insists the stranger give him a blessing. At this moment, Jacob is blessed with a new name, Yisrael, Israel. First time that famous name is ever used. It means either Prince of God, or more likely, one who wrestles with God. And we, children of Israel that we are, have been wrestling with God in one way or another ever since. As the angel tells Jacob, your name shall be called Israel, for you have wrestled with gods and men and have prevailed. Jacob, now always known thereafter as Israel, survives, and the reunion with Esau proves anticlimactic. Esau comes up with that big army and gives him a hug and a kiss, and if all is not quite forgiven, at least no blood is shed. The dramatic narrative of Jacob's struggle and triumph have become a metaphor for our own struggles with belief and family baggage. We are all descendants of Yisrael, the one who wrestled with God. And if we engage in that process for the sake of sacredness and belief, we too can triumph and perhaps reach our own promised land. Even during this season of merciless commercialism around Thanksgiving and end-of-the-year holidays, holiness can still be created and found. That very search and struggle makes us a people of Israel and gives us a land engaged in that same pursuit. While we truly are children of one who wrestled with God, when we choose to wrestle with God, we elevate our lives and experiences. May it be so in this season and in all seasons. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Kinky Friedman, will tell us what prompted him to release a new album after a 3-decade hiatus. Hear about it, and as always with Kinky, a whole lot more when we come back on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998 and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In the midst of the horrors of the Paris attacks by ISIS, the Palestinians have found a way to make things worse. The Fatah Party of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has now decided to blame the terror attacks in Paris on, get this, Israel. Cartoons blaming Israel for the attacks were published on the party's official Facebook page one day after an op-ed in the official Palestinian Authority Daily said that Israel's Mossad agency was behind the attacks. A cartoon published by the Fatah, that is the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas's party, shows Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu helping an ISIS terrorist in the cartoon near the Eiffel Tower aim his machine gun. Another cartoon shows two matches in a matchbox labeled terrorism, the head of one match shaped like an ISIS terrorist and the other like an Orthodox Jew. This is consistent with the fabricated view of reality so often espoused by Palestinian leaders, in which Israel is charged with imaginary crimes in order to demonize and delegitimize the only Jewish state. As the official Fatah newspaper opined, it is not a coincidence that human blood was exploded in Paris at the same time that certain European sanctions are beginning to be implemented against settlement products. And while France leads Europe in advising the Security Council that will implement the two-state solution, Palestine and Israel, which the Israelis see as a warning of sudden danger coming from the direction of Europe, where the Zionist occupying settling endeavor was born. Yeesh. Unbelievably ugly propaganda full of flat-out lies by the Palestinian Authority. The truth is that it's the Palestinian Arab Muslims who have been actively engaged in acts just like the Paris attacks for more than 40 years and have perpetrated attacks just like the Paris attacks against Israelis and Jews and plenty of other people in lots of countries. The correct comparison here is between ISIS and the Palestinians. And any big lie that the Palestinian leadership can perpetrate that compares ISIS to others besides themselves, and especially Hamas, their brothers in Palestinian arms, is just further immorality. The PA newspaper also ran a cartoon that compares Israel to ISIS and repeats the huge falsehood upon which recent Arab knife attacks on innocent civilians, bloodlettings, have been based. In the cartoon, an Israeli decapitates the Al-Aqsa Mosque next to an ISIS terrorist beheading a hostage simultaneously and using the same sword. This is worse than creepy. It is real-life evil. Officially, Abbas and Fatah both condemned the Paris attacks but said nothing about blaming the Jews or Israel. But this is again speaking out of both sides of their mouths. The official Fatah newspaper continues to simply lie, to promulgate the falsehood that Israel is trying to make Al-Aqsa into a shared religious site. This is what is now called quaintly differing versions of reality. It is actually a deliberate and destructive attempt to distort the truth and the real events into self-serving lies. But then, so much of the current Palestinian leadership is based on a foundation of falsehood. It is very sad, and ultimately will fail to produce better lives for Palestinians. And if anything, it empowers the Israeli right wing and alienates the large majority of Israelis who are moderates and wish for enduring peace. But peace, when the so-called moderate leaders of the Palestinians claim you are making common cause with ISIS, this is an abomination. If Abbas has any leadership left in him, he must denounce such words and actions, not hide behind the fact that they are published in only the Arabic language versions of his official newspaper. In other news, the Orthodox Union has joined an array of Jewish groups urging the U.S. to get to yes on admitting Syrian refugees. The OU statement came as the U.S. House of Representatives voted 289 to 137 last week for a law that would increase the stringency applied to existing restrictions on the refugees. The Orthodox Union is the second major stream of Judaism to favor bringing in 10,000 Syrian refugees over the next year, as proposed by the Obama administration. It follows the reform movement in this.
Earlier last week, the URJ, the Union for Reform Judaism, was among 81 organizations, including 11 Jewish groups, that signed a letter urging Congress to allow the administration's plan to proceed. In its statement, the OU emphasized its understanding of those who ask for strict vetting, encouraging a sensible process of reviewing and enhancing security, but it said it should not be a pretext for keeping out refugees. While security concerns must be paramount, our focus as a nation should be on getting to yes, the Orthodox Union said. Like other Jewish groups, the OU invoked the plight of Jewish refugees from Nazi Europe. Just a few decades ago, refugees from terror and violence in Hitler's Europe sought refuge in the U.S. and were turned away due to suspicions about their nationality, the OU said. In fact, the Jewish immigrants that ultimately came to these shores fully adopted American values and have contributed greatly to the fabric of our great nation of immigrants. HIAS, the refugee advocacy group that has led Jewish activism on behalf of the Syrian refugees, condemned the House vote. Congress's vote is particularly baffling when you consider how well the existing process works, it said. Refugees are already more thoroughly vetted and screened than any visitor to the U.S.
I don't know how Welch's does it. 40 congregates in every glass of their grape juice. They never ever add sugar. It's naturally sweet. Really, really.
In other happier news, Welch's grape juice is now going to be kosher, and it might be coming to a Seder near you. For decades, America's kosher grape juice market has been dominated by Kedem, whose sweet libations come in Concord, Blush, White, Peach, Diet, and all kinds of sparkling flavors. But with U.S. sales flat when it comes to non-kosher grape juice, Welch's, America's largest grape juice company, is muscling into the kosher market. Starting in January, Welch's will begin selling 100% grape juice certified by the Orthodox Union as kosher for Pesach and year-round use. The kosher juice is being produced in partnership with Manischewitz, the 120-year-old kosher food company known for its very sweet Concord wine and ubiquitous Pesach matzah. The bottles will carry both Welch's and Manischewitz's logos, and Manischewitz matzah boxes will have ads for Welch's kosher grape juice. And finally, according to People magazine, former soccer star David Beckham is the sexiest man alive this year. Beckham's grandfather was Jewish. He considers himself more Jewish than any other religion. And he and his wife, Victoria Beckham, the former Spice Girl who's now a fashion mogul, have enrolled one of their kids at Stephen Wise Temple's Jewish Day School. That makes him, well, I don't know, kind of Jewish. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back our guest this morning, Kinky Friedman, one of our all-time favorite guests here on Too Jewish. He has a new album out called The Loneliest Man I Ever Met, in which he recorded a number of great songwriter songs, not just his own. Tell us, Kinky, how did you choose the songs on an album? It's always an interesting question for an artist.
Well, on this one particularly, it was recorded for a live witness, a silent witness, for a stray cat, a cat that ran away, a feral cat of mine, and for a dead sweetheart. And I don't really care when I was doing it. We weren't thinking about disc jockeys or radio play or charts or Hollywood or fans, anything like that. And so it makes it a very pure product. And every song has a linkage, a spiritual linkage to either the person who wrote it was a friend of mine at a certain time, and that would be Tom Waits, Bob Dylan, Warren Zevon, Merle Haggard, Johnny Cash I only met briefly, but his song Pickin' Time was my father's favorite song.
Boy, it's one of the simplest songs, but it's really effective.
You know, Rabbi, you can see it all. Like, maybe I'm over-identifying with my field of study, but Warren's song, My Bleeps Bleeped Up, applies not just to one man dying of cancer, but I think it's pretty much the state of our country and the world right now, and it may not be fixable this time. And I just think that the doctor that he goes to may be Jesus Christ, the girl from the North Country, might be the same girl, might be the the hooker from Minneapolis. I'm not sure, but I do think that the things you deliberately let slip through your fingers are the only things in life that you keep.
It's a beautiful phrase. You're going to tour. You're going to sell albums, which is kind of what you do when you tour.
Albums, T-shirts, sweatshirts. I will sign anything but bad legislation.
That's a great line. I want to talk about Rodham Jew Boy a little bit, which is about the consistency of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism seems to be, after receding in America for a long time, on the rise again. What do you think about that? Is that true? Is that something you perceive?
Yeah, I think it's probably true. I think political correctness doesn't extend to anti-Semitism, or it doesn't seem to. We used to call Mexicans and Italians, we used to call them greasers. Now, because of political correctness, we have to call them lubricanos. but for anti-Semitism, so we get down on that. I mean, if I tell any joke that may be humorous but is mildly homophobic, they'll all the whole world will jump on me. But I think Jews have a very important role, and that is we are the Lieutenant Columbos of the world. We stand outside the country club and look in. We see what's going on, and that's important. That's what an artist should do. He should be on the outside looking in.
You mentioned Shel Silverstein. You almost did some writing with him a long time ago.
That's right. Well, my beep was beeped up at the time.
As the song says.
Shel was furious that I overslept a meeting that he and I were going to meet and write songs one morning at 10 o'clock. And he kind of woke me up. He said, "That's where you are. That's why you are where you are, Kinky." And it really pissed me off at the time, and I said, but it did wake me up to realize that this was a real opportunity. This guy is a genius songwriter, and that would have been very interesting if Shel and I had done some stuff together. But then again, a lot of us can't get out of our own way, and I think it's probably the reason I have a linkage to these people is that I was not very I didn't care. It's the one thing Donald Trump cannot do. He can't be Mr. Anonymous. He can't. Everything he does is practical. If he gives money to a children's hospital, he slaps his name up on the wall, you know?
Yes.
That's too bad. And the people that I really love and respect and admire, they died broke. Most of them died broke, and their life are like Hank Williams with their life just unraveling before their eyes, you know?
But it sure makes for great music.
Oh, does it ever? I mean, you have to be miserable if you want to write anything great. That's what I think. I've already said that that to be an artist, you got to be ahead of your time and behind on your rent. But you got to be miserable too, and that produces the great work. And that's the linkage between classical music and country music, great country music. And remember, we're the ones who buried Mozart in a pauper's grave.
Yeah.
We're the ones who wouldn't buy Van Gogh's paintings.
And now they're about as valuable as anything humanity's ever produced. I want to thank Kinky Friedman for a great visit here on Too Jewish. New album, The Loneliest Man I Ever Met, available on CD. And I'm sure T-shirts and maybe cigars with cigar bands and pretty much everything else available.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, check the website, kinkyfriedman.com. We'll be all over the country. I don't think we're getting Arizona yet, but we will.
We'll have to get you out here. Thanks so much, Kinky. Good luck on the tour.
Thank you. We'll see you down the highway.
My pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Rabbi Rami Shapiro, author of many books on Kabbalistic thought and practice. On his new book of poetry, Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our guest, Kinky Friedman, of course, and his song, Wandering Star. May you have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, and a week, we deeply pray, of peace.
That didn't look better looking back. I was born under a wandering star. Mud can make you prisoner and the plains can bake you dry. Snow can burn your eyes, but only people make you cry.